The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
This XM Channel 80, just when Cam was gaining momentum. Oh, say it ain't so. 888-SAY-ESPN, 729-3776. Be a part of the Max Kellerman Show Nation. See, Raj, I don't know the Max Kellerman Show Nation. I think it's just Max Kellerman Show Nation. You know what I mean? Doesn't that sound a little awkward, the Max Kellerman Show Nation? Something's got to give there. Anyway, be a part of it on the Dr. Pepper call-in line. ESPN Nation is presented by Dr. Pepper. See, Raj, I don't say the ESPN Nation, just ESPN Nation is presented by Dr. Pepper. College football is back, and so are the fans. Return to glory with Fansville by Dr. Pepper, the one fans deserve. First, it's time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. Look, Cam had a great outing last time seen. Let's be honest. Remember all that stuff about Mac Jones is going to start and Cam Newton, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, Lord, look at Cam. Don't forget last year, that game against the Seahawks that they lost because Bobby Wagner made that play, that goal line play. Cam looked, I don't know, Cam versus Russ looked elite to me. That looked like the crispest quarterback matchup. I mean, they looked great to me. Cam looked great. And last time seen, he looked pretty good, as Larry David might say. And what happened? Well, we're talking about the two tight ends that Bill Belichick's paid $50 million for day one of free agency, all the money spent in free agency, and the defense is coming back, and oh my God. And New England Patriots quarterback, let me say that again. New England Patriots quarterback Cam Newton will remain away from the team until Thursday due to a, quote, misunderstanding on COVID tests, quote, conducted away from NFL facilities, the club announced. The team statement was this. He received daily COVID tests, which were all negative, due to a misunderstanding about tests conducted away from NFL's facilities, and is required by the NFLPA protocols. Cam will be subject to a five-day entry cadence process before returning to the facility, the statement read. Entry cadence? What does that sound like? How does that work? Entry cadence process? In Newton's absence, first-round pick Mac Jones bumps up the depth chart, followed by veteran Brian Hoyer. Now, what does this mean for Cam Newton? Well, I mean, if he doesn't have COVID again, I think he's going to be fine. I think Cam is going to surprise a lot of people this year. I will bring it up again. He's a former MVP. When last seen healthy before the move to the Patriots with Norv Turner as his OC, he was having the best passing season of his career. And then since then, he has not really been given an opportunity to show what he could do. Not really. He was hurt the whole time with the Panthers after that, in the midst of that season when he got injured. And then he came back on a new team, new roster, zero offensive weapons. That's why Tom Brady left. Most of the defense defected before the season because of COVID. They opted out. No tight ends. Josh McDaniels, you know, Bill Belichick offense with no tight ends. It's been like embarrassing, the tight end play. At least it's pass catchers. Come on. And under those circumstances, he still came two plays away from going 9-7. They had some good wins. Now, if Cam, if he doesn't have COVID, he just has to go through protocols. There's not going to be lingering effects. Cam is poised to have a really good year. What does a good year mean? I mean, in a 17-game season, I think this is a double-digit win team. Does that get you to the playoffs? Maybe yes, maybe no. It's a very tough division. If Tua shows what he can do, if Tua turns out to really be a franchise quarterback, that's three real good teams in the same division. But I don't know that the Bills or the Dolphins are better than the Patriots yet. I don't know that. Certainly the Bills look like the class of the division. But when you're looking at one team and thinking, that's an 11-12 win team, and another team and thinking that's a 9 or 10 win team, you know, the ball bounces one way here, one way there. All of a sudden, that team that you didn't think was quite as good got more wins. Don't forget, Cam Newton, when he won MVP, his best receiver was his tight end. He was his own best running back. The Patriots have a deep roster in terms of running backs. They have some offensive line play. They have depth at receiver. They have two real good tight ends. They should have a really good defense. And if Cam Newton, are we sure? This is what I'm asking. Are we sure Cam Newton couldn't have his best season as a passer this year? Are we, you sure about that? I'm not. Not at all. When last seen healthy in Carolina, he was having his best season as a passer. He has had a full year now. Remember last year, no preseason, no practice, practice facilities shut down. He got COVID. No weapons. Like, under those circumstances, two plays away from 9-7. You sure Cam won't have his best passing season? I think there's actually a really good chance he does have his best passing season this year. That was Straight Talk Wireless, no contract, no compromise. So the rookie quarterbacks, Act 2. Here are my takeaways from preseason week 2. First of all, Trey Lance. And this was, I think, this was reported on ESPN.com. You read a lot of stuff and forget where everything's from. But the real encouraging thing, the point I'm about to make, the really encouraging thing about Trey Lance, which did not escape my attention, was, or nor the attention of others, was that first game, he goes from, wow, that's impressive, to, as you know, the more reps he got, the worse he looked. He was a little exposed. His inexperience was. Opposite this time. Starts out shaky, finishes strong. 30 snaps, it was a 15-10 win. Trey Lance finished 8 of 14 for their 102 yards, 2 TDs, 1 interception. Now, Garoppolo is 3 of 6 for 15 yards and an interception. And, of course, Coach Kyle Shanahan was asked about his starter week 1, and here's Coach.
Are you going to make an announcement? Is Jimmy Garoppolo your starter week 1?
No, I'm not making that announcement. Let's try, though. Whenever I feel like it.
Tonight's not the night.
Not tonight.
Look, Trey Lance has real upside that Garoppolo doesn't have, but let's not sleep on Jimmy G. I mean, how many times do I have to say it? The guy has won 3 out of every 4 games he's quarterbacked for a team, same roster, that has lost 3 out of every 4 games when he hasn't quarterbacked because he's been hurt a lot. It's not like, well, with a replacement quarterback, this team goes 500 and Garoppolo gives you a premium over that. No. With a replacement quarterback, the team goes, their winning percentage is like 250. For the same team that when Garoppolo quarterbacks the team is 750. By the way, with a trip to the Super Bowl, I find it very unlikely that barring injury, and there's always a chance that Jimmy G gets hurt, they're going to start Trey Lance over Jimmy G, given what I just told you, especially when, in the history of the NFL, no first-year starting quarterback, no quarterback that started as a rookie, has in that season even been to a Super Bowl, let alone won one. And when you look at the Niners, they have a shot. They're one of the 5 or 6 or 7 teams you look at, you go, yeah, they could win a Super Bowl this year. So I find it hard to believe that Trey Lance is going to replace Jimmy G, you know, now. Kyle Shanahan, the real thing with him is he schemes guys wide open, and you got to be able to get him the ball. If Jimmy G consistently can't get wide open guys the ball, we'll have a different conversation. But that has not been his MO for most of his career. By the way, Justin Fields and Zach Wilson, remember all the talk about Fields slipping in the draft? By the way, I brought it up at the time. Trevor Lawrence was going to go first. But after that, remember maybe Justin Fields, who was the 1A to 1B to Trevor Lawrence's 1A when they came out of high school and everything, and it was presumed it would be that way out of college. And then I started hearing about Zach Wilson. All right, well, come on, stop it with the Zach Wilson. Let me go take a look. I wasn't watching BYU football. Let me go take a look at YouTube. Whoa, look at this Zach Wilson. Whoa. Then Mina Kimes brought up on First Take, actually, Max, you know, that BYU offensive line gave him all the time in the world. I went back and looked. Yeah, they did have a lot of time. Then you started hearing out of training camp that, and actually, Wilson doesn't look too good. I started thinking about what Mina said. Nah, maybe I was overestimating all those off-platform things he was doing and all that special kind of arm talent he looked like he had, the way he was moving around to his legs, because he was so well-protected in college, at least on the YouTube stuff that I saw. And now the pros is going to be different. But what we've seen from Zach Wilson so far is if that was the case preseason, he's a quick study. Or in camp, he's a quick study because he looked great. Great. And you know what I think about Zach Wilson? I'm going to get to Justin Fields in a second. It's the kind of draft where if you're the Jets, you're almost glad that you picked second because no one could pass on Trevor Lawrence. Remember the Baker Mayfield Sam Darnold draft? Darnold went second, and it was of the quarterbacks, and that's because even though he checked all the boxes, and Baker did not check every box, like he didn't have the height that Sam Darnold had, maybe not the movement, you know, but the legs. But did Darnold check all those boxes at an elite level? No. And Baker checked certain boxes, like accuracy out of college, at an elite level, right? The problem with Trevor Lawrence is in the history of football, I don't know if any draft he doesn't go first, because he checks every single box at an elite level. So you can't pass on him. Who is going to pass on Trevor Lawrence? Which means if you're the Jets, you don't have to make that choice. And Zach Wilson falls to you. And that's the kind of draft. I remember when the Knicks got unlucky and wound up drafting fourth and wound up with Porzingis. At the time, I was like, yeah, that's not the worst thing in the world. Porzingis looked really good to me. I was like, you know, the other guys you kind of had to take, D'Angelo, Russell, but Porzingis fell to the Knicks. They weren't faced with a tough choice. Same thing with the Jets and Zach Wilson. They got to take Zach Wilson. And one more thing, and then I'm going to want to move on. And I want you to listen to Robert Saleh, and I want to talk about Justin Fields. But Zach Wilson, in certain ways, there's like some Steph Curry stuff going on. This is what I mean. Guys, it's not like no one in the past had ever hit a 35-foot shot on purpose, right? Steph Curry's like, I'm practicing that shot because I'm going to shoot it all the time in games. Because if I can practice, if I have the ability to make it, why should it just be by accident or out of desperation? Why not make it a weapon in my arsenal, make it consistent? Not that Zach Wilson's the first guy to ever do it, but he seemed intent upon practicing the off-platform stuff that Aaron Rodgers and Patrick Mahomes do, right? It's that stuff, the fact that you can consistently do that is not just God-given ability. Yes, you have to have the arm and the legs for it. And the courage to do it. But if you're not practicing that stuff, then sometimes you'll be successful, sometimes not, and you do it out of desperation. When you practice it, what you're saying is, I'm banking on that being a weapon in my arsenal. And when you watch Zach Wilson play, you can see it. I'm not saying he's as good as Mahomes or Rodgers, but he wants to be that kind of quarterback. And he has the ability to be, I'm not saying quite on that level, but he has the ability to play that way, and he practices to do it. Very impressive. Maybe the most impressive guy so far, except, well, here's Coach Robert Saleh on Zach Wilson.
You know, I thought he had good command. I thought he was under control. I thought he handled pressure well. He was good in and out of the huddle. You know, he's progressing. And just like his bad days, this was a good day, and it's just another day. And he's got to continue to stack up and take the good with the good, take the good with the bad, and find ways to get better.
That was a Freudian slip out of Robert Saleh, the head coach of the New York Jets. Take the good with the good. He couldn't think of the bad. He was like, well, Zach Wilson, you got to take the good with the good. That boy good. By the way, what do you think of a 154.7 passer rating? 9 of 11, 128 yards, 2 touchdowns against the Pack. Is that good? Is that good out of Zach Wilson? Okay. Justin Fields. Because even if Zach Wilson overall so far has been better, there's something about Justin Fields. If you had to say who's been the biggest star of this preseason, it's Justin Fields. And he had that thing coming out of college. And I don't mean the way, like, I brought this up on First Take today about Tua Tagovailoa. You have to be kind of careful when what you're hanging your hat on with a guy is like he gives you that feeling, right? Like, that was Mark Sanchez. Well, there's something about him. He knows how to win. Really? Is he just in a good program in college? And what do you mean there's something about him? And if you can't point to things, tangible stuff, then I get a little suspicious. Well, there's something about him, right? But Justin Fields, oh, there's something about him. And he has the arm. And he has the legs. And he has the leadership ability. Listen to him talking about the fans chanting for him when Andy Dalton's in the game. This is a rookie after his second preseason game. What do you think?
I noticed it. Of course, you know, the fans are awesome getting me out there, but they also have to realize, you know, Andy's a human being too. Andy's out there on the field right now. So I really just think it's kind of disrespectful to Andy, you know, them cheering my name out like that. And, you know, they have to, you know, trust in coach to, you know, make sure he's making the right decisions and, you know, just cheer Andy on. Like, there's no – that's not helping Andy play better than cheering my name. That's not doing none of that. So, you know, I would say, you know, my advice to them would be just cheer for who's out there playing on the field.
Know why he's not a player hater, Justin Fields? Because he's a player. I mean, he's a baller. Justin Fields is, when you talk about the biggest star of the preseason so far, it's Justin Fields. I know Zach Wilson just had a better game. Justin Fields had a good game, but there's everything about this guy. Remember, the one thing, why did his draft stock fall? One reason. His processing wasn't fast enough. The other four guys, they like Trevor Lawrence's processor. They like Zach Wilson's. They like Trey Lance's a whole lot. And they like Mac Jones. The one guy that we're looking at, they're like, he's not processing fast enough, but look at his completion percentage. Look at its yards per attempt. Look at everything, right? You want him to go through progressions when the guy's wide open. How about getting the wide open guy the ball? Did he lead the guy? Was it positive? Was it, you know, yes, he did everything. Did the arm to make all the throws? Yes. The legs? Yes. Does he know when? Yes. But the processor is not fast enough. And now the Chicago Bulls are sitting pretty with a guy who can be their quarterback for the next 10, 20 years. By the way, Jimmy Garoppolo, I start over Trey Lance because, as I said, rookie quarterbacks, when do they ever even get to a Super Bowl? And I know records are meant to be broken. It doesn't mean it'll never happen. Maybe it happens with Trey Lance and Garoppolo might get hurt. I start Andy Dalton and not Justin Fields, and I'll tell you why. And Harry Douglas was on First Take today making a good point. You don't want to lose the locker room, and that's always a danger, right? When the locker room says, this guy's better than that guy. Right now, Justin Fields is better than Andy Dalton, pretty obviously. So you don't want to lose the locker room, but for a different reason, I start Dalton over Fields than for the reason I start Garoppolo over Trey Lance. I don't want to get Justin Fields killed behind that Bears offensive line. He's already been leveled. Here's the thing with Justin Fields. The Bears are one of the most iconic franchises in sports history. I mean, on the planet Earth. In the 1980s, or sorry, the 90s, on Saturday Night Live, there was a skit, The Bears, that was taking place in the middle of two different Bulls three-peats in the same town. But it wasn't the Bulls, it was the Bears. The 85 Bears means greatness in football. Like, once upon a time, 27 Yankees, 85 Bears. What was Hyman Roth in The Godfather Part 2? Michael, we're bigger than U.S. Steel. U.S. Steel used to mean that. Nowadays, what is it, you know, Amazon or what giant corporation means that they're just dominating everything, right? That's the 85 Bears. That town is football crazy. They've never had a good quarterback. Never had a good quarterback. Not since Sid Luckman. They haven't had a good quarterback in my lifetime. I'm almost 50 years old. Never won. Where you go, that guy's really good. They won the Super Bowl. I wouldn't say McMahon was really good. He was good enough. They finally have one who could be great. He could be great. When you hand him the ball, you need to make sure you never have to do what they did to Tua last year. Now you sit him down. Now you take him out of the game. Now he's back in. You never want that to be an issue. You want to hand it to him and know, next 15 years, he's got it. So you got to make sure he's ready to consistently deliver when that happens. And two, you have to keep him healthy. Look, all respect to Andy Dalton. He's been a solid quarterback for a long time. Let him be the tackling dummy because that Chicago Bears offensive line is atrocious. Let Andy Dalton be the tackling dummy and keep Justin Fields clean until this line gets a clue. Once the line gets a clue, you put Justin Fields in. The Max Kellerman Show, presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests, join me on the Goodyear Hotline. Meantime, Ben Roethlisberger. You know, I noticed Ben Roethlisberger, you know, his debut, the Steelers' new offensive coordinator, Matt Canada. Look, Ben Roethlisberger said it after the game. When he was asked last year about his arm, he's like, oh, I felt good, but he had nothing, no baseline to compare it to post-injury. Now having last year, he can say, now I feel good. Okay. And I will point out that I remember that Colts game late in the season. I forgot what week it was. But late in the season, he was throwing the ball down the field in that comeback against the Colts. And he hadn't done that most of the year. So it's not impossible that he can raise his ceiling. But for people talking about Roethlisberger's bounce back year, he had a bounce back year. He played 15 games. He started 15 games last year. He went 12-3. That's the bounce back year. That's the bounce back. That line is still no good for Pittsburgh. I don't believe in their run game. I think their defense is great. One of the, maybe along with Washington, maybe one of the two best defenses in the NFL. But I don't believe in the offensive line, so I don't believe in the run game. So a 38-year-old comeback and quarterback who we saw had no time to throw and usually didn't push the ball down the field is going to have limited upside. I believe the upside is still limited. You see on the screen on ESPN Plus, 8 for 10, 137 yards, 2 touchdowns versus the Lions. Look, he took a pay cut. He has something to prove. I wouldn't count him out, but I wouldn't count on Roethlisberger either. I think he's the I think he's probably the worst quarterback in the division this season. Joe Burrow is a potential superstar. Lamar Jackson has won an MVP. Baker Mayfield is a good ascending quarterback with weapons everywhere and a great offensive line. It's not that Roethlisberger's terrible. It's that there's a good chance he ranks 4 out of 4 in the division this year. This is the Max Kellerman Show coming to you live from the Seaport District at Pier 17, brought to you by Chase. Coming up, Jameis gets the start tonight on Monday Night Football. Does he have a chance to lock up the starting gig? According to Forbes, gyms, stores, and more are set to go on an epic hiring spree to meet pent-up demand for all those services. Businesses reopening means that millions of jobs will need to be filled, so where do they turn to fill these roles fast? ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter's technology is so effective that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. You can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/Kellerman. That's ZipRecruiter.com/KELLERMAN.
The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
The Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus, also Sirius XM Channel 80, an important Monday Night Football game in August. Is there such a thing? Is that an oxymoron? 888-SAY-ESPN, 729-3776. I think not. The Max Kellerman Show is presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests, join me on the Goodyear Hotline. Is there a big Monday Night Football game in August tonight? Brian in California, you're on the Max Kellerman Show, 888-SAY-ESPN.
What do you say there, Broody? This is all Brooklyn.
By the way, either that's really a jerky boy or you do a spot-on impersonation.
I know Johnny Brennan. He's a sizzle chest. He's got his head you know where, you know. But I got a question for you, Maximus.
Yeah.
Did you recently fall down a flight of stairs and bump your head or something over the weekend?
Why do you ask?
Well, you got to understand that the Browns are the Browns. The Ravens are going to be the Ravens. The Steelers are going to roll and get better than they did last year because everybody's healthy. Now, let me ask you something.
Wait, why do you say the Browns? Wait, hold on. Why do you say the Browns are going to be the Browns? I fail to see where ancient history or history from 3 and 4 years ago is relevant to today. They have the best offensive line blocking for the run and protecting the passer in the NFL. They have a good defense, a great offense. Like, what don't they have?
They have the Browns organization has always made bad decisions. They're not you want to talk franchise, you talk Patriots, you talk Steelers.
No doubt.
You talk about the
Seahawks. I love. By the way, the Steelers are. Here's the difference between the Browns and the Steelers. Steelers are always going to compete. You know, Mike Tomlin without Roethlisberger went 8-8. I get it. Steelers are, you know, run the ball, stop the run. Steelers football. When Tomlin took the job, out of market team when I was a kid when the Giants stunk was the Steelers, right? Like, I get it, but that is not relevant to the Steelers are the Steelers. The Browns are the Browns. This Browns team is unlike any Browns team we've experienced. You can't just write them off because they're the Cleveland Browns.
They still make the wrong mistakes. They don't know what to do with all that talent. I just don't see it. I'm sorry.
I see it. I think the Browns are alive. I think the Browns are alive. Look, if Baker Mayfield were Josh Allen, the Browns might win the whole thing now, right? Baker Mayfield's not an upper-end talent, but he's good, and he's got a great team around him.
Hey, I wouldn't bet the farm on Baker Mayfield. I wouldn't. Yeah. I'm sorry.
I wouldn't bet the farm either. I might bet a barn and a few animals and maybe a couple acres, though. All right, look. Look, Brian, by the way, did you hear that Jerky Boys impersonation? Raj, it was dead on.
I thought we had a celebrity on the line.
That's right. All right. Could this be an important Monday Night Football game in August? Jameis Winston gets the start. Mina Kimes knows a lot about football. Boy, she's paying attention, too. And she said something about Jameis, which inadvertently changed my mind today about him and Taysom Hill. See, I thought, I didn't know which guy was better, but I was leaning toward Taysom Hill because Jameis can throw the ball, Taysom Hill can run the ball, but Jameis has had a lot of chances, and he's not distinguished himself as a good NFL quarterback. Taysom Hill hasn't had chances. So I get it with Jameis, it's the devil you know, but with Taysom, I don't know, like, you can imagine, you can use your imagination a little bit. Can you win with him? As you know, like, is he going to lose you as many games as Jameis will lose you? But while Jameis has more upside throwing the ball down the field for sure, and by the way, he was a Heisman Trophy winner. He won a BCS national title. He was the first overall draft pick. He's gone to a Pro Bowl. He's led the league in yards, right? Like passing. He has a long credentialed, you know, he's a long resume. He has credential bona fides that Taysom Hill doesn't have as a quarterback. I get it. And he has more upside. Well, that's easy then, right? Well, there's one more thing Jameis has for him. He could be boom or bust. Taysom, because of the legs, may be more like a higher floor. Less risk in a certain way. Why is that even better for Jameis or if it's boom or bust? Well, in the NFL, you want to be great if you can help it. But being okay, being good instead of okay, being okay instead of bad, that doesn't actually help you. Ideally, you are great one year, and when you're not great, it falls apart, right? Because then you get better draft position. It's not like the NBA where you're entering a lottery. The NFL, your record gets you the draft pick. And there is a fall off. Like when you talk about the very top picks in the NFL draft, you're not allowed to miss on those because it's just too good a chance to get a real impact player. If you're choosing in the top 10 in the draft, you want a Hall of Famer, right? You hope to draft a Hall of Fame player. Top five, certainly. You want a great player. So Jameis not only gives you the upside, but if it's a bust, it might be, you know, with 30 interceptions, it might be a big enough bust that it puts the Saints in a better position going forward because it improves their draft position. Otherwise, I don't believe that much in either guy. I think they can both be, they can start for an NFL team for a while, and this year they'll have to. But if you have Jameis and Taysom Hill, both as quarterbacks on your roster, you don't have a quarterback, right? Like, that's the old saying, got two quarterbacks, it means you don't have any quarterbacks. It is an important game, though, for Jameis. Jameis looks good. Because as the reality is inching closer, it's becoming more apparent. Like, oh, wait, are we really going to go with Taysom Hill? Sean Payton seemed very convincing to me in Miami a couple years ago when he was like, he's going to be the quarterback of the team. And at the time, it was a kind of getting more expensive Teddy Bridgewater or Taysom Hill. And I think he felt like, I can approximate our production with Taysom Hill in the meantime, who hasn't really gotten an extended look. Instead of paying Teddy Bridgewater for maybe not much better. But since then, he's gotten more of a look. And Taysom Hill still hasn't won the job. Does that say more about Taysom Hill? Doesn't say great things about him as a quarterback. But what does it say about Jameis Winston? You're the former number one overall pick. You've won a national title and a Heisman. You've led the league in passing. You've gone to a Pro Bowl. The passing yards. You've gone to a Pro Bowl. And you still haven't locked down the job against a running back? Against a gadget player? You still haven't locked it down? I think it looks worse for Jameis than for Taysom Hill. And for that reason, for Jameis especially, it's a really important game for him in August tonight. An August game on Monday Night Football. I think really important to the career of, you know, one of the more famous quarterbacks in the world. Famous Jameis. Oh, we're going to talk to Adam Schefter about this in the next hour. By the way, did I hear this right today? Dak won't be 100% this season? ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. Save when you bundle auto, home, or motorcycle insurance. Visit progressive.com. This season? Dak won't be right? I'm going to tell you why that could actually help him out. people all saying Dak has the most pressure and this and that. I think Dak is one of the quarterbacks with the least amount of pressure on him this year. Is it time for a future Hall of Famer to hang him up, by the way? DoorDash is here with Summer of Dash Pass. Right now, Dash Pass members are taking $10 off groceries, alcohol, pet food, and more. Need a nightcap? $10 off. Got a cough? Get relief delivered for less. Want to surprise your crush? Get it. Send a gift. Save. Try Dash Pass for free and get special savings, exclusive menu items, and $0 delivery fees year-round. Get more from your neighborhood now with Dash Pass in the DoorDash app. And stay cool out there. Terms and conditions apply.
The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
The Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus, also Sirius XM Channel 80, 888-SAY-ESPN, 729-3776, brought to you by Goodyear, helping you discover the road ahead. Goodyear more driven. Time for Manny Pacquiao to hang him up. Yordanis Ugas wins by unanimous decision against Manny Pacquiao. Now, on Max Unboxing, Tim Bradley, the great Tim Bradley, multiple-time champion during his career, excellent ESPN boxing analyst now, came on the show and I said, I think Ugas has a good chance for an upset. Tim thought that he was made for Manny Pacquiao, but here was my point. Ugas comes from the Cuban school of boxing. It's a difficult style. It's a highly effective style, if not always crowd-pleasing. Okay? Ugas was a decorated amateur at the elite international level. So like in boxing, you'll notice the pound-for-pound best usually dominated the international level of amateur boxing. The champions who are like lower-level pound-for-pound, not like top five or six or something like that, a lot of times those guys, maybe they didn't dominate the elite level of amateur boxing, or sometimes like they just come from such an impoverished background that they never got that advanced in you know, they turn pro too early, like Manny Pacquiao or someone like that, right? But otherwise, they come from, you know, deep, deep elite and international amateur backgrounds. Then the guys who win belts but don't quite get to that elite championship level usually were dominant or at least somewhat successful on the national level and then not great internationally. Then the guys who are contenders and maybe they don't really win a belt, those guys could, like, you know, sometimes they might win a belt but maybe not hold it long. They dominated their local Golden Gloves, like their local tournaments. But when they went to the national level, they couldn't win that much. And so on. There are levels in the pros and it reflects largely, there's a strong positive correlation to their amateur background. Ugas was an elite international amateur. Like, he won a gold medal at the World Championships. He won a bronze in the Olympics. This is an elite level. He's not the most dominant international elite amateur, but he was a successful one at the elite level. Okay, then as a pro, so Cuban school of boxing, you know, successful at the elite amateur level, medaling in the Olympics and stuff. Then as a pro, not that long ago, a lot of people thought he beat Sean Porter. Sean Porter's a great fighter. I know. Well, he's very good, not great. I don't know. I think Sean Porter's going to wind up in the Hall of Fame one day. Tough guy to beat. And he got the decision against Ugas. It was a split decision. A lot of people thought Ugas won. So that guy is fighting Manny Pacquiao. And Pacquiao, by the way, and Pacquiao's training for Errol Spence, a very different kind of very aggressive southpaw fighter, very different from Ugas. Pacquiao's 42, hadn't fought in 2 years, had been through wars with the following fighters. Marco Antonio Barrera, Hall of Famer, fought him twice. Eric Morales, Hall of Famer, fought him three times. Juan Manuel Marquez, Hall of Famer. These are guys all either in the Hall of Fame or going. Fought him four times. Tim Bradley, fought him three times. Fought Floyd Mayweather. Miguel Cotto, when he was great still, right? Fought so many guys. Like, I'll leave off Oscar De La Hoya at the end of his career, who was still pretty effective. You know, I'll leave off Shane Mosley when Mosley was... I'll leave those guys off and out of this. Dude, he's had over 70 fights, been through the wars with a who's who of the last 15 years. Started at a flyweight. He's not a welterweight like these guys. Flyweight's 112 pounds. But it's not just that he started at flyweight. He won his first world title as a flyweight. World championship is a flyweight. Some guys say, well, he started at this really light weight class. Yeah, but he wasn't really facing serious competition. That was really lighter than he was. By the time he became a world-class fighter, he was three divisions over that. No. Pacquiao was the lineal champion of the world as a flyweight. Then moved up. Think of how many divisions. flyweight. Now, he didn't stop at all these divisions, but many of them he won belts in, and a few of them he was actually the guy, the champion in. And these are all the divisions on the way to junior middle, which is as big as he got. Flyweight to junior bantam, to junior feather, to junior light, to junior welter, to junior middleweight. That's 9 weight classes above where he won his first world title. So over 70 fights, a who's who, been through the wars, hasn't fought in 2 years, fighting a last-minute substitute with the opposite style of the guy he was training for. Who's really good, Ugas? Who's really good? Yeah. Oh, man, he got upset. Yeah, no kidding. I thought this was a dangerous fight. And by the way, since he lost that split to Sean Porter, he could have easily won. He hasn't lost since then. Ugas won 4 straight. Now, Manny was asked if this is his last fight. He said, I don't know. I need time to relax and make a decision. I doubt this is Manny's last fight. He has too big a name, and he's still too effective and can make too much money. I don't know why his camp, though, is against fighting Conor McGregor. If I was Manny and I could pick up tens of millions of dollars to fight a guy who's not really a boxer, just a talented fighter who can also box way better than he ought to, in McGregor's case, why wouldn't you want to do that? You want to get in with one of these welterweight killers for a fraction of the money? All right. But Manny is a real fighter. And, you know, the fight right before Ugas, even though COVID means it was 2 years ago, was against Keith Thurman. Keith Thurman's a hell of a fighter, was undefeated at the time. Manny knocked him down in a war and won a close decision that I thought he deserved. Like, could Manny Pacquiao still beat a lot of really good welterweights? Yeah, he can. I thought Spence was going to knock him out. But I thought he would have gone down in a great fight. Yeah, I doubt Pacquiao's done. He can still make too much money fighting. And I don't think it was so unpredictable that Ugas was going to beat him. Now, I told you before the break I was going to tell you why Dak, in fact, is not facing pressure. So I know you're waiting to hear that. Everyone's saying Dak is facing so much, the most pressure in the league. No, I think he's facing among the least pressure in the league. But I will not get to tell you about it, because I fell in love with my own voice, the sound of my own voice as I was talking about Manny Pacquiao. So you're going to have to wait through another commercial break to hear me talk about Dak. Act 2 for the rookie QBs. I'm going to get into all of it coming up. Max Kellerman Show.
The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.